Good morning, USA. Welcome back to Shallow Vows, a podcast dedicated to American Dad. I'm your host, Sam, from Connecticut, Western Connecticut, that is. And I am bringing you episode 2 of American Dad today, which is called Threat Levels. Also, I'm bringing this specifically to Seth MacFarlane. Seth MacFarlane, if you're listening, if you're back, thank you. I appreciate you, but maybe one day you'll see it. Anyway, what are we doing here? Well, I've been a fan of American Dad for like 15 years, and I wanted to do something about it because I have a couple of goals in terms of the show. I want to meet Seth MacFarlane and explain to him what my theories are and talk to him about the show. And I also want to guest star on an episode. So I figured the best way to do that was to talk to him until he starts talking back to me. So anyway, let's get into it. So episode 1, when I recorded it like 8 times. I messed up so much because I'm not good at talking, and I think I said that before. I'm not used to talking alone, just at nobody. I mean, obviously whoever's listening, I'm talking to you, but when I'm recording, I'm not talking to anybody. And I recorded it like a billion times because I just couldn't get it right. So I'm hoping today is a little bit better. You know, I'm more excited about this episode because I have more to talk about and I have more ideas for the podcast as well. So I just have like my structure's a little better and I'm starting to like figure out my talking voice and I have like new things about the show that I want to, like, stay on top of and take notes on and keep track of. So, the original trackers, I think I wrote them down somewhere else. Oh my gosh. You know, I thought I was organized, but whatever. So, the newspaper headlines, of course, is a big one. That's a classic. And then we have the flagpole outside of their house in the yard and the threat level indicator on the fridge. I kind of grouped those together because they're smaller, like, not only in importance, but also, like, just smaller details. And they're kind of, like, roped into, like, the layout of the house, which is the other tracker that I'm keeping on top of, is the house layout. We all know that, or I hope you guys know. If you don't know, this is important. The house changes depending on what's going on with the characters, especially later on in the show. And I think it's important to see all the little details that, like, change about it through each episode. And then I've been talking about my theory that I want to bring to Seth MacFarlane, but I haven't told details about it here. So I call it the goo theory. And that relates to, I think it's season 3, episode 1. What is it called? You know, I know the show, but, and I know it's about the goo chambers, but I'm going to look it up. I got to, because I know what it's called, but of course I'm forgetting now as I'm trying to tell you. Yeah, vacation goo. So that's kind of where my theory starts, but I'm trying to find more evidence of before this episode airs. So obviously that episode will come way later in the podcast, but I want to keep you guys in the loop about the theory now so that when vacation goo comes, it'll make a lot more sense. So in this episode, Threat Levels, I do have a little bit of evidence towards my theory. And I'll give you a little rundown. I don't want to, like, ruin anything for people that haven't seen it or get ahead of myself. But basically, I have this theory that Roger controls everything about the show. Everything. From, like, all the personas, how he treats the Smiths, how they act, their little side quests, the layout of the house. I think Roger is in control of the entire thing. And I think he uses the goo chambers in the episode Vacation Goo to do it. So pre-Vacation Goo, I still believe that there is evidence, and if I am starting from scratch looking for all these things, I'm going to be keeping you guys in the loop as well. And then the last thing that I just thought of for this episode, and I'm going to stay on top of it from here on out, is all of Francine's hobbies. We know that Francine is a housewife and, you know, she primarily takes care of the family and she's just a little bit crazy because, you know, she loves drugs and drinking and she's just like Roger. But she also has like a bunch of jobs that end up not working out. And I want to keep track of everything that she does because she's a very well-rounded woman, if you think about it. So those are all the new trackers. So we'll be getting into those throughout the show and then at the end. And then, oh, where did I want to go from here? Of course, anyway, so that's what we're doing here. That's the idea of the show. Now you have more stuff to think about as the episode goes on. And if you notice, I like to play the episode that I'm talking about in the background because I feel like in those spaces where I might have a pause or my voice, like, changes or whatever, then you guys can, like, still subconsciously hear the episode and know what's going on. So let's dive on in. We're going to start with the synopsis. This is what the episode's about. After getting Francine a job as a real estate agent, Stan is mad because she ends up earning more money than he does. Feeling emasculated, Stan starts bum fight nights to get back at her, treating the homeless like wrestlers. So Francine gets a job. It goes too well. Stan doesn't like it. And to get back at her, he tries to emasculate other men because he feels emasculated. So a couple of fun facts about the show. Of course, the air date, it aired May 1st, 2005. The star sign of this episode is, it's a Taurus. And the moon phase that day was last quarter, which I think is waning crescent. And then on this day, on May 1st, 2005, Lenovo acquires IBM's personal computer business. Shigeru Ishiba becomes Prime Minister of Japan. Israel invades Lebanon. More than 250 people die in floods in Nepal. Ugh. Sorry, RIP. The number one song in the U.S. is Candy Shop by 50 Cent. And the number one movie in the U.S. is Superman Returns, directed by Bryan Singer. I don't know if it's the number one movie. It just said on this website that I found that it was the popular movie on this day. I'm just going to go with number one because that's obviously what they mean. And then we only have one guest star that's famous that I know of, Steven Root, who plays Dick. And I think he was in that show Barry with, oh my God, what the hell is his name? Who is the lead guy in Barry? If you can already tell, I'm getting dementia. Like, the dementia is coming from my ass. All right, Barry Show. Who the hell is this man? Bill Hader, yes. Steven Root was some guy, again, I forget who he was, in Barry alongside Bill Hader. Monroe Fuchs. That's, I think, his name. Anyway, we're not talking about Barry. This show is not about Barry. This is about American Dad. Anyway, Steven Root plays Dick. And then a couple fun facts. Actually, I think this is the only fun fact that I found. Mr. Monopoly is seen during the bum strike. Now, I just watched the episode again right before I started recording to, like, refresh my memory. And I forgot to look for Mr. Monopoly. So if you watch the episode, keep an eye out for Mr. Monopoly, I guess. And then there's, like, a couple goofs, like a little couple loopholes, or not loopholes, but, like, little things that maybe they missed or whatever. These, goofs I don't really care about because they're going to happen all the time. And the only goofs I really care about are, like, the layout of the house. So, but this is part of it. So the threat level indicator actually in this episode is missing the arrow. So it's just the colors on the fridge. And I think they show it a couple of times in the kitchen. And I think each time there's no arrow. So those are some fun facts about the episode. And now we can actually get into my notes in chronological order. Because again, I think I explained this in episode one. I can't rewrite my notes and try to group everything by, like, what it is or what it's about, because I'm going to miss stuff for sure. Like, I don't have a script, like I've also said, but I take notes as I watch the episode, and if I just don't go in order of the episode, I'm gonna miss things, and then that's gonna be, it's gonna sound like half-assed. So I'd rather sound all over the place than, like, I missed a bunch of things and I don't know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? And I have ADD anyway, so who cares? I'm already jumping around like a motherfucker. Anyway, so the newspaper headline in this episode is, "Stuff happens as wave of ambiguity spreads." That's a good one, because stuff is always happening. There's a lot of ambiguity in this world. Even, I guess, back in 2005. I don't know what the fuck was going on, but maybe there was. And stuff is just happening all the time. I always have stuff happening. I'm sure you always have stuff happening. So that's a good one. I feel like that one, that aged all right. And then, you know, we're introduced to a lot of side characters in episode one in the pilot, but we actually weren't introduced to Greg and Terry yet. So Greg and Terry make their first appearance in this episode when they're on the news, of course. And they're being, like, extra gay, extra cute, because, again, it's a little expositional. We don't know these men. We don't know that they're actually, like, friends. They end up being friends with the Smiths. And they end up being, like, almost like main characters. So they're cutesy, demure, all that shit. And they're talking, you know, they're just on the news talking about the threat levels, which I think it's funny that in episode one, Stan moved the threat level indicator on his fridge. But in this episode, he's not talking about the indicator on the fridge. There's no arrow. And they're talking about the threat level indicator. Like, a level went down. And they got to take a half day off of work. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's, like, the politics of it all. Because, you know, episode one was very politically charged. This one, not so much. And I guess that's just, like, part of it. I don't really know. But, you know, school's out. They got to take a half day. And Stan got to go home early, which we love, leaving work early. Am I right? And before I get very much farther, because, again, I'm going in chronological order, so I'm going down my notes. And I'm noticing in this episode, one, the animation is a little bit better. Like, the characters are starting to look like themselves. There's a little bit more color. There's, it looks like it's falling into place. And, their personalities are starting to, like, really come out. Like, they're really starting to show, like, their true, non-exaggerated selves, which I like. So, Stan leaves work early because threat levels are down. We love that. And we get a little one-liner. Klaus being into Francine. Hold on, I gotta pause. Klaus only makes one remark in this episode about how he's into Francine. He says something about her being bent over the counter or whatever. And we don't really get much more of that anymore in this episode, which is fine, because we really don't need it. Again, I think that fizzles out pretty quickly. I think they only put that in the pilot episode to give Klaus, like, something to do, being that he's a man in a fish's body. And again, nobody has personalities yet, so I think it's just, like, a way to get him in the door, and then they can figure out what to do with him after. So they're starting to, like, you know, change him a little bit. You know, he makes, he has more to say in this episode. Of course, I don't remember everything that he says, but, you know, we'll get into that. I'll go back to that, because he does have more to say, and that's important. So where can I put this down? Okay, I'll make a little star here. Where is that? He says more. Calls Stan out on his ship. Okay, I got that for later. All right, so Stan comes home from work early, and he's got his thermos with him, and he drinks out of it, and his family's like, oh my god, why is there, like, a biohazard thing on the thermos? And it ends up being this like organ liquefying agent called Cream of Death, and he somehow like switched his soup thermos with the biohazard thermos. Now, in my notes, I wrote down what is in it, which I just answered that question. It's liquid, it's cream of death, and it liquefies your organs. But I'm wondering what it tastes like, because Stan took not one, but like two sips, maybe three, and all he says is, this is not soup. And it's like, okay, so if it's not soup, what the fuck does it taste like? If it's liquefying your organs, I'm thinking like bleach, ammonia, a combination. Do they somehow make something that can liquefy your insides taste good? I mean, I guess it's the CIA, and they have done a lot of things to this country and to people, so maybe they can do that. Of course they can make that real in the show, because it's a cartoon, but... Now, I'm also wondering, what happened to his soup then? Like, is that going to be, are they going to, like, did other agents, like, swap it with him? Did they take it? Because soup is kind of useless, I would think, in terms of liquefying organs. It can probably be used for something else, like nutrient research. But I don't know if the CIA does that. That's probably up to, like, the FDA or whatever. And then, yeah, so, I don't know. It must have tasted all right if it just didn't taste like soup, but it tasted like something else. Anyway, so that's the biohazard thermos. I thought that was really funny because I just want to know. I kind of want to taste it, kind of like a Krabby Patty. You know, like you've seen so many Krabby Patties. But I really just want to know what's in the thermos, what it tastes like. And then I think I skipped this part. No, I didn't. I talked about this. No arrow on the threat level indicator. Now we're in the kitchen, so we can actually see that in the episode. It's just the colors. And I also noticed, it came up right away, there is a flag on the flagpole, which is interesting because there is a flag, I think, the entire time in the whole episode on the flagpole, but the flagpole itself moves, so we'll get into that. And then, what is this here? Greg tells us the Smith home. Okay, yes, so I think in episode one, I made a comment about how I think that the type of house that the Smiths have is like a center stair colonial, which I guess is not true. Terry said that it was, some sort of colonial, not a center stair, but some other type. And Greg says, no, it's actually an updated Cape Cod. But that plays into, like, the layout, because it's like, okay, we know what type of house they have, at least, and we know, like, most types of houses like that have, like, you know, all the same layout, which is why they're all categorized, right? So we know that, like, an updated Cape Cod is, like, a little bit bigger than just, like, your regular cape, I guess, because they have, like, an attached garage. But it also does not explain, still, the window by the stairs, really, because where the garage is in the Smith house, the window by the stairs would be, like, looking into that. So I don't know if they want to be looking into the garage from the living room. I think that's a very interesting characteristic if they do. So we know what type of house they have now. It's just, like, it doesn't explain parts of the layout. And then, you know, they drink, they're exposed to, like, this cream of death. And I guess you don't just have to drink it because they were all exposed to it by air. And they were still going to die. And they, the biohazard man comes into their house and he's like, you're not going to die. And they're like, oh, my God, yay, we're not going to die. We're going to live. This is amazing. And he says, for 24 hours, which is just enough time to learn not to interrupt someone when they're talking. And I don't know about you, but I interrupt people all the time. I think I've done it a couple of times. I interrupt myself when I'm talking because I start with one idea and then I have another. So I have to start the second idea. And when people interrupt one another, of course it's very aggravating. It's very frustrating. I do my fair share of it, and I'm still frustrated when people interrupt me. But I get this guy's frustration on one hand, and I also understand doing the interrupting. So I just wanted to point that out, because that's just like, that's what I do. I don't know if anyone else does that, where you just like start, you can't help but start talking. I don't know if it's because my ADD is like so bad, but, and of course that comes up again, like that biohazard man doesn't go away. And now let's jump to Haley. So Haley actually hasn't been in the house with them. She was out trying to start a homeless shelter in the neighborhood. And she comes home, and she's in a biohazard suit, and she's like, oh, like, they're letting me see you guys before you die. And Steve, like, he blows into her air vent, and now, of course, she's exposed. And, you know, she's stuck with them, but she explains that she was out trying to build a homeless shelter, and that's how Stan, like, ends up getting access to the homeless men for his bum fights later in the episode. And I just wanted to say that I think Steve like blowing into her vent and being like, haha, now you're like gonna die with us, that's very much like Smith family behavior. Like, they are so insane and so chaotic that of course they're gonna like take each other down with them. They have nobody else. Like, nobody else can relate to them like they can to each other. And the next thing I want to say, this, of course, again, I'm going in chronological order of my notes, so this has nothing to do with Steve anymore. We're on to another behavior by Roger. But if you have seen, like, all of the show or most of the show or even just, like, a few later episodes, you can kind of gather that Roger doesn't really like the Smiths. He's only there because he's, like, stuck with them because he rescued Stan from Area 51, and he has nowhere else to go. Like, who the fuck else is going to take in an alien and keep it a secret, you know? So, and, of course, they have him locked away in the house right now. They don't let him do anything. They walk all over him. They talk down to him, and this is where some of my goo theory, pre-goo chamber evidence comes in, because he hasn't liked them the whole time. So, of course, like, when he has more control of his situation and others, of course he's going to lash out at them and, like, treat them like shit and go crazy and, like, make their lives, like, a living hell by the way that he acts later. And you can tell that he doesn't really like them in this episode, because they're all 24 hours away from dying, and he's just like, I want dimmer switches in every room. I want to paint the walls seafoam green. I'm going to do a bunch of redecorating when you guys die, because I can't, I'm not affected by any human ailments, which we just learned in this episode, that he's not affected by any illness, which is funny because Stan points out a sore on his lip, which is obviously probably herpes, and Roger is just like, stay out of my business. And it's like, okay, so now maybe we're getting inklings of Roger being like a fiend, you know? Like, if he's already like out somewhere getting herpes, or he got herpes, he's obviously like, you know, he wasn't, you know, he was obviously out participating in activities, and he's keeping it a secret. So that's another thing that can relate to my goo theory, is that maybe he's been like sneaking around when no one's paying attention to him, and he already kind of knows. Yes, he does know, because he had, okay, I have to write this down, but for the record, obviously I'm still recording. This actually has a lot to do with my theory, because if you watch the show later, you know that Roger, like, has lived all these places, been all these people, lived different lives. Like, he was there when, like, Biggie got shot, and, you know, he was there for someone in the late 60s. I forget what episode that is and who it was, but it was some woman. Stalker Channing. He knew Stalker Channing in the late 60s. That's the reference. I just don't know the episode. And Roger obviously, okay, he's stuck at the Smith house because they think he can't go anywhere because he was at Area 51. But obviously, Roger has been on this planet for like hundreds of years and he's done all these things. And then finally the CIA caught him and brought him to Area 51. And that's where Stan met him. So Stan doesn't even know Roger's whole backstory. We don't have any backstory for him yet, but Stan definitely doesn't. And of course Roger can go out and get herpes. Of course he's not like really stuck in the house. He just has to act that way because he has no way to like control them. Okay, I'll be writing that down. That's part of my goo theory evidence. So when we finally get to that episode, we'll be circling back to all of this. Anyway, that was a whole thing. Now I'm out of breath. All right. So the next thing I have is a note about the layout of the house. There is still a window by the stairs in this episode after we learn that it is an updated Cape Cod. Okay, so we have this window for a little bit, but I know for sure it goes away. I know this. This is not a Mandela effect. That's real. So we're going to be keeping track of the window until it goes away, and then it'll make sense. Now, the flagpole. Yes, there is a flag on the flagpole in this whole episode, but when the hazmat team comes to quarantine their house, the flagpole is totally gone. It's like they just ripped it out of the ground for the sake of needing like an extra foot of space in the yard for another hazmat man. But while the team is there and they have their trucks and everything and all their equipment, there's no flagpole. So the flag is there, but the flagpole isn't for a little bit. So the flagpole itself moves, which again, convenience for what's going on in this episode. It wouldn't have moved if there was no hazmat team. And then back to the layout, the basement door is still behind the couch. I think that stays pretty stationary because it's always usually the entrance to the basement or a storage closet. So when the time comes when it turns into a storage closet, I'll be pointing that out as well. But the basement door, the basement entrance pretty much stays the same, I think, for the whole show. But in this particular episode, there's no door for it, so it's just the entrance to the basement, just straight up. And then, yeah, I said the flagpole comes back with the flag on it. So the flag never goes away, just the pole. And then the biohazard man comes back into the house, and they interrupt him again, and he's like, wow, so I guess your manners are, like, the only things that died here. And it's like, yeah, man, that's real. Like, people think that, like, when you interrupt somebody, you're just straight up being rude. And most of the time that is true. But when you have, like, something like ADD or ADHD or, you know, like, anything, really, anxiety maybe, you're gonna like interrupt people like without really meaning to. And I just think that this guy gets so, I think it's funny that he gets so mad about it. So that's, wait, where did that go? Did I skip like a bunch of things? No, I don't think so. Yeah. Oh, maybe I did. Oh, I did. Yeah. Because I wrote down a quote. And Steve was like, I can't believe I'm going to die a virgin. And Francine goes, aw, sweetie, there was a 70-80% chance of that happening anyway. Like, Steve is just chronically a virgin. He will always be a virgin unless, you know, it gets to, like, season 30 and they finally decide, oh, he's going to, like, lose his virginity in high school because they stay the same age. He will always be clocked for being a virgin. And I think in episode 3, he has another close encounter with a girl. Not in this episode at all, but, you know, they have to, like, point out in the absence of a girl that he's going to be a virgin. And then one more thing about the layout, and I think I only have a couple more notes about the layout for this episode, but right now by the staircase, including the window, there are three pictures, and they're kind of small. And I'm pretty sure that those kind of change up. So I just wanted to point that out too, because stuff by the staircase is usually what changes, like commonly, I think. And then, oh yeah, I said this. The animation and the colors are a little bit better. The characters look more like themselves. Like, Barry has, like, a moment where he kind of looks a little weird and he sounds a little weird. But I'm pretty sure it's the same voice actor for him the whole show. And he has one moment where he looks kind of wonky. But other than that, like, the characters are really starting to look more like themselves, like I said. It's, a slight improvement from episode one, which is already, it's cool to watch. And I know that there were a couple months in between episode one and two, I think, what is it, February, March, April, yeah, like three, four months in between. So they had time to, like, improve, like, how they wanted the characters to look, how they wanted the house to look, the colors. So that, it's cool to see, like, that little jump. Now we're also introduced to another little side character, real estate agent Barb Hansen, and I think if you've seen later episodes, you know that she has a hook for a hand. But in episode two, she has both of her hands. She's a hand model as well as being a real estate agent. And I forgot, you know, for a time that there was an episode or two where she had both of her hands. So I had to point that out because, you know, she comes back, like, occasionally, Barb Hansen, as, like, a side character. She's a hand model at this time. And this also kind of relates to my goo theory. I didn't really explain this aspect, but here's my note, the goo theory. Barb Hansen is voiced by Rachel McFarlane, first sign Haley might have started Personas. So part of my theory is that Haley is involved with Roger and his personas and all of his characters. I don't want to get too much into that until the episode where that's very apparent comes. It's definitely after the goo episode. I just forget which one in particular, because it's Haley and Roger on, like, a side thing, and she outsmarts him by playing himself. She's trying to get a job for, like, community college credits, and she gets a job at Roger's bar, and she needs him to sign her internship form, and she switches a bunch of characters, and then she pretends to be him and tricks him. So I don't want to get, like, too much into that evidence, but part of this pre-goo chamber is that, you know, Haley, maybe Haley has personas also that kind of pop up here and there that we don't know about. Maybe that'll just make more sense when I get to the goo episode. I'm going to try to get there as soon as I can, because that's when shit really goes crazy. For me, anyway. Now, Stan in this episode, he's not so politically uptight, it seems. He's not, like, as obsessed with terrorism, because in the pilot episode, that's all he could talk about was terrorism. He was, like, shooting at things and going insane, but he was showing signs of just, like, being his real unhinged self, and he does that a couple more times in this episode. So, you know, Francine and Stan, they meet Barb Hansen, the realtor, and Francine is kind of, like, down on herself. She's like, oh, like, that just makes me feel like I never, like, I'm, you know, this age, and I haven't really done much with my life, and she seems, like, so accomplished. And so what does Stan do? Hold on. I gotta take care of my cat water fountain. I'm just gonna take a brief pause. Sorry, my cat's water fountain was making, like, a weird noise, so I had to go refill it. So anyway, we're talking about Stan being unhinged and how he's less, like, politically uptight and not so, like, he's patriotic. That's just, like, part of his core personality. But he doesn't show a lot of patriotism in this episode. He kind of just is an insane person. So Francine is sad about, you know, how she doesn't feel as accomplished as Barb Hansen. So she's talking about getting a career in real estate and how it's, you know, it would be hard to do. So what does Stan do to jumpstart that solution? He kidnaps Barb Hansen, sends her to Guantanamo Bay, and then gives Francine Barb's little blazer, her cranberry colored blazer, and puts her in Barb's office, and just all of a sudden Francine has a job just like that. She's a real estate agent. And that was how he thought to solve the issue. Not going to Barb and being like, hey, would you want to like hire my wife as like your assistant or as like another agent or whatever? No, he sends her to Guantanamo Bay. That's, we just really go from 0 to 100 there. And that's when it doesn't happen in this episode, but this is where I think Barb gets her hand cut off because she takes a napkin from two of the other inmates and they're like, we're going to cut off her hands in the middle of the night. They don't like show it or get into it in this episode, but I think it does come back. And then, and he also, after, you know, Francine starts doing really well and is successful and he's feeling emasculated, instead of talking to her about it initially, you know, they end up making up at the end, but initially he's intimidated and jealous and emasculated. So what does he do? He points a sniper rifle at her. And the only thing he changes is the scope when he's like, what am I doing? She's like, you know, the love of my life. She's my wife. And he changes it to a heart-shaped scope. And he thinks, oh, yeah, that's better. Like, and he, like, smashed his head into the wall because, you know, Francine, like, showed him her first paycheck, and it was way bigger than his. So he just decides to beat his head into the wall and, like, leave dents. He just, you know, he really is like, he's probably just as unhinged as Roger or Francine in later episodes, I would say, if you think about it, because while he's very conservative, very much like patriotic, red-blooded American, whatever you want to call like super patriots, he is that. But then he's so conservative, he doesn't really know how to just, like, let loose and do it in a way where, like, a lot of people would do it. He's got to do it through, like, his political patriotic lens. So he just acts unhinged in, like, different ways. Like, Francine doesn't kidnap anybody. Roger doesn't really kidnap anybody. But Stan thinks that is the solution. And I think we don't give him enough credit for being as insane as Francine and Roger are later. And he's the one showing that right away. Like, we haven't even seen Francine get crazy yet. So I think we got to give him more credit for being unhinged. And then what's my next thing here? Dick and Jackson are official CIA side characters. So Jackson did make an appearance as like a narrative like soundboard for Stan in episode one. But now Dick is here, voiced by Stephen Root. And we really see like full conversations between them that are funny and not just like expositional. Like, oh, what are you going to do about your daughter? Why is she acting like this? What is going on here? It's them, they start showing personality too, Dick and Jackson. And, you know, they are still used as like expositional soundboards in a way, but it's a little bit more like, it's a little bit looser now because, you know, Stan is talking to Jackson and Dick about Francine and her real estate career. And how he's, like, upset by it now because she's making more money. And Jackson makes a comment about how he was, like, really gay when he was a real estate agent. And how, like, he says, like, a bunch of shit about how he was gay when he was a real estate agent and he's not gay anymore. And as soon as he quit, like, it went away. And, oh, because they were also talking about, oh my gosh, I totally forgot to like tie this in. So Francine's first paycheck when she sells her first house that Stan is so upset by is the house that she sells to Greg and Terry across the street Francine is the reason that Greg and Terry live across the street and they become friends and they become more like main side characters. That was all Francine's work. And of course, Stan is upset because they're reporters and they're gay. He doesn't understand like the whole gay thing. And he's talking about that in relation to Francine and her job. And that's when Jackson was like, yeah, I was gay when I worked in real estate. I don't really know how that came up. I just watched the episode and I already kind of forget, but it was just, you should just watch it. And Seth MacFarlane, that was good. That was funny. And then Stan makes a comment about if there are two gay men, where's the vagina? And Jackson says something about how he wishes he had a vagina. So I'm going to guess, you know, he's still kind of a little bit gay, I think, because that comes back in the episode Stan's Night Out when they go out and pick up prostitutes. And Jackson's prostitute is transgender. And, of course, back in 2005, it was very politically incorrect. Very, like, you know, but they talk about that. And I think this is kind of like foreshadowing, you know, Jackson being a little bit gay, which we love, you know. The gay doesn't die, I don't think. And he just, yeah, Stan just, like, doesn't understand gay people, and, like, he still kind of hates them. But, again, this is coming through his, like, Republican, conservative, patriotic lens. So he just, you know, makes everything fucking weird when it comes to gay people. And then, yeah, so Francine was the one to move Greg and Terry across the street. And, of course, that becomes, like, a pivotal, like, a big thing for the show because Greg and Terry become main side characters, like I just said. And, you know, she, when you think about it, she kind of gave them, like, their whole life in the show. She gave it to them because she's also the one who's, you know, the surrogate for their baby in a later episode. And I just think, you know, Greg and Terry, like, they can be assholes to Stan because Stan is, like, he's just, like, a homophobic jerk. But Francine did a lot for them, and they still are like, ugh. Like, she's so, like, stupid. Like, I don't know. We'll get into that more as the show goes on, but Francine gave them, you know, she gave them a lot, and I think that that's, you know, that's important. So, anyway, another note about the layout of the house. The kitchen door goes right out into a living room to the right. So, when we're looking at the kitchen, you know, the sink is all the way to the left, the table is kind of in the middle, and then there's the door to the right. That leads to a dining room. And I just wanted to make a note of that now in case, you know, it's different in future episodes because it might lead to a hallway later. It might lead to the living room. And I think it ends up, you know, leading to both of those in different episodes. So I'm making a note of that now. A kitchen door goes to the dining room to the right. So right now, at this point in time, we have a dining room directly outside the kitchen, okay? And a window by the stairs, right, directly inside. And then I was talking about Klaus earlier and how he's not just talking about how he wants to, like, fuck Francine day and night. He's actually talking to them about other stuff. And I was making a note of this before. He says more, calls Stan out on his shit. So this is the part I get to in my notes where, you know, Francine shows Stan her paycheck from the sale of Greg and Terry's house, and he's flipping out, and then she walks away, and Klaus straight up says to Stan, Francine has emasculated you. Like, you have just been uprooted by your little housefrau. And, you know, this is only the second episode, but now he's getting bold. Now he's, like, starting to, like, you know, say some shit. And it's not just about Francine and her ass or her boobs. So, you know, moving right along with all the characters, again, their personalities are starting to come out more. I was talking about how Haley, you know, part of this episode is she starts, like, a homeless shelter. And that's more of, like, her speed. She's not so, like, diehard anti-conservative. She's just very, like, hippie and liberal and wants to, like, be an activist. Like, she is an activist at heart. And her going out of her way to start a homeless shelter in the neighborhood is her first sign of, like, being her activist hippie self. Now, where was I? What was I looking at? I am... Okay. Yeah, I just read that. Greg and Terry smashes his head into the wall because of Francine's first paycheck. And... What? Oh, yeah. Okay. I was talking about Klaus. And I forget what I was just saying, but I'm just going to keep going because we must persevere. So Stan really cannot stand, like, Francine having a good job. Like, he wants to, like, make her feel better, like, accommodate her and her, like, little hobbies and stuff. But he really doesn't want her, like, above him in any way. And it's so fucking terrible because it's like, why wouldn't you want your wife to, like, make as much money as you or even more, you know? Why wouldn't you want to work less? Why wouldn't you want to have more money in your household? Like, my aunt and uncle, they have their PhDs in biochemistry and they are always getting, like, these crazy niche jobs. And so every, like, 6 months to a year, they'll, like, they have a running joke where it's like, oh, you know, my Aunt Ebba is making more money than him. My Uncle Josh is making more money than her. And it just, like, it keeps going back and forth. And it's funny to them. Isn't that the kind of vibe you want for your house where you, like, have children that you're raising? And, you know, like, I don't know. I just, I think it's funny that Stan just, like, can't have her above him at all. I don't know. I mean, it's not funny in terms of, like, you know, women. Women can do whatever they want anytime. But he just hates it. And then now we're jumping to Toshi, because now I think in the episode where my notes are, we're going to Steve and how they're trying to get money for, I think either just video games or like a new PlayStation or something. And Steve asks Toshi a question, and Toshi says something like, oh, you assume that I have this because I'm Asian, like, you're racist. And Steve goes, that's a long way of saying yes. Like, again, Toshi, second episode, doesn't like Steve, and that stays pretty solid through the whole show. But, you know, Toshi isn't above them because he gets just as horny as every other teenage boy does when he sees, you know, the girls that they're trying to get for, like, their little mission to get more money for a PlayStation. And he just, like, oh, he's like, oh, my pants are tight. It's like, yeah, Toshi, because you're a little horn dog and you can't be around a girl any more than Steve can. So let's maybe tone it down. I still think it's great that he does this and acts this way, because I think in the pilot episode, I was talking about how, you know, if I lived in a country where, like, nobody understood me, but I refused to learn the language, yeah, I would hang around with, like, whoever I thought I could pick on and then just, like, make fun of them the whole time, because, you know, what else are you going to do? I'd be so bored. And that's a way to, like, I guess entertain yourself with people that there's, like, a complete language barrier. But anyway, he's not any better than them because he's horny. So that's kind of that. And I think now, okay, so, yeah, in this part of the episode, they're trying to get PlayStation money. And I think what Barry says is, oh, so Toshi can, like, sell his computer. We'll get PlayStation money. And Steve says, oh, you're making it way too complicated. We're going to use the camcorder that Toshi has, that's what it was, to film girls going wild, drinking beer, and then we're going to sell that to girls gone wild and make money off the video. So they're trying to do that, and all of this ends up tying into, like, the whole homeless shelter thing that Haley's got going on. And then we jump back to Stan, because my next note is here, is that what I said? Sometimes you just have to ignore me, even when I'm talking. Just you know, pay attention to what interests you. But anyway, my next note here is coming off super gay to Greg and Terry. So he, I don't know if you even remember how this came about, but Stan gets in the hot tub with Greg and Terry at night and is talking about how things are like a little rough at home with the wife. And he's like, sometimes you just need to be around men. So he so doesn't understand being gay and gay people that he has no idea that he's dropping all of these gay hints because he doesn't know. Like, he truly is so ignorant to gay people and how you like flirt with people and how you like make moves on people. Like, he just doesn't understand any of that. And then, my next note here, it was part of a previous note I had. I didn't finish the sentence because I ran out of room. But when we're talking about Stan being unhinged, and he is like trying at this point now. Sorry, my throat kind of hurts. I've been talking a lot, I think. It's only been 50 minutes. That's not... I'm doing pretty good. He was, you know, she has this really great job now, and now he's trying to destroy it. So the first thing he tries to do is, like, arrest her boss for having cocaine donuts. And, like, again, that's what he jumps to. He jumps to the violent solution, the extreme solution. And it's like he only knows these solutions because he's so, like, CIA coded. Like, he... just such an extreme man, and now we're starting to get that side of him, you know, and that's, I really like that. And then, yeah, so he's talking about getting Francine fired from her job, and Donald Trump makes an appearance, because at this point, I think he was doing The Apprentice or some other reality show, and fired was like his big thing, and this is when Stan calls him Mr. Trump. This is when Donald Trump was just Mr. Trump, which is crazy to think about because, you know, he was just Mr. Trump for a really long time, but it feels like almost even longer that he's been president and like post, you know, presidency. And just that kind of tripped me up a little bit because I forgot this was like, you know, 15 years. No, not, oh my God, not even, like 11 years before Donald Trump was elected, so that's a long time, you know, and I don't know, that was just, it was a little jarring to me, just hearing, like, Mr. Trump, like, ugh, the whole thing is so creepy, but anyway, so going back to Steve, you know, he makes this whole convoluted, complicated plan to get girls, bribe them with beer to film them going crazy, and he tries to find a house to do it at, and it ends up like being the house where Haley is using, like, using for the homeless shelter. So instead, Steve starts to get, he jumps in on like the whole homeless shelter thing, and I think he's the one, he is the one, I don't think, I know that he starts the bum fights for money so he can get video game money. That wasn't Stan's idea. And I think we jump away for a little bit because, yeah, Stan was able to get Francine fired or whatever, like, because, you know, he arrested her boss or he did something to her boss. He shut down the office, but she started working from home, and we can see Roger, like, and I think this might have to relate to the goof theory later, but he's trying to find any way that he can to, like, fuck with any member of the Smith household. So Roger's taking this opportunity to fuck with Stan and his emasculation by being Francine's assistant and helping her with her real estate business at home, which I just think is really funny because, you know, he is doing something. Like, he technically does have a persona here. He just doesn't have a costume. And he's got, like, he's got something to do, and he's fucking with Stan, and he thinks it's funny that Stan feels, like, so horribly emasculated like this. But, Yeah, so he's just like, he's just taking this as an opportunity to like egg Stan on and like, you know, make the situation like worse for him. And then this is where I want to get into the Francine hobby tracker, because I realized as I was taking notes for this episode the other night that this isn't the first time Francine has a job. This isn't the first time she has a hobby. This isn't the first time that she dabbles in some activity. And I want to keep track of every single one. So I have like a separate list here. I have a list for all of my trackers. So I've got Goo Theory receipts. I've got the newspaper headlines. I've got, what's the next one? The Smith House layout, the flagpole slash threat level indicator, and then Francine's hobbies. So although this is like a real job and she made like real money, this I would include in like her hobbies because it's like just roped into like every activity she does. But real estate is the first one that she has. So that is just stated like for the record. We're going to see Francine do a lot of stuff and try a lot of different things, but real estate is the first one. So we can always like go back and like reflect later. So I wanted to start keeping track of that now. I'm glad I caught that one, because that'll be interesting to follow later, I think. Now, oh God, I'm looking at my notes for the next episode. I gotta stay on track here. I have so many papers in front of me. But I found it. Okay, I'm good. So Steve, yes, he starts the bum fights so that he can get video game money. And Stan jumps in and jacks the whole idea from him, because now Stan is trying to get back at Francine for emasculating him. So he's going to go and emasculate other homeless men for to make himself feel better. And he is just so degrading to these poor guys, like just talking down on them and being like, those are for people. Like, oh my God, he's so awful to them. But of course, in his fucked up, weird, you know, strange mind, in his unhinged behavior, this is what he thinks is okay. So, you know, as Stan starts doing this and taking the idea from Steve, Haley, of course, is like, you can't be doing that. Like, you can't make these poor men, like, fight each other. That's horrible. That's so, like, humiliating. And this is the first time that we see her, like, her and Stan butt heads over something that is, like, real. Like, I don't know. In the first episode, they were kind of just like, you're wrong. You're wrong. You know, like, your liberal views are wrong. Your conservative views are wrong. But now it's like they're really like opposing each other with like her activism and his conservativeness, his narrow-minded thinking. And, you know, like, she's trying to be a real activist here and whatever. So I think that's enough of Haley. And then, of course, like, Stan continues to act unhinged by pretending to be homeless himself and getting into a fight, even though, you know, it ended up being an actor and it was all like a setup so that he would, I don't know what the solution was really, to make him feel better or make him feel better about Francine's job, but they set it up, I think. I kind of forgot where that jump happened. You know, again, I watched this episode like right before I started recording and I already forget like little things like that. But I feel like I'm doing okay at remembering other little things. So this is why I go in chronological order of my notes, because I would have missed so much of this shit. And then, okay, so talking about, you know, they're starting to show like their personalities. Francine, this line is so fucking funny to me. And I don't mean it like in an offensive way. I think it's funny the way that she says it. I think the delivery is excellent, and I think that's just, like, it's part of, like, the show's humor. But when she was showing this couple a house, and it ended up being, like, the house where Stan was doing the bum fights, they're walking to the backyard, and the woman client is like, you know, soon we're going to be more than just a couple, implying that they're going to have, like, a child. And Francine goes, congratulations, I just thought you were fat.
Yeah, it's been that kind
and the lady goes, we're adopting.
TGI Hump
Day, huh? Oh my God, because the lady, like, she looks like pregnant. You know, she's not like, she just look like she's only like got weight like where her belly is. So she's like, but then Francine was like, I just thought you were fat. Like, oh my God. First of all, why would you say that to somebody? And then, like, why would you say that to a client? And then it's even funnier that the woman was like, we're adopting. Oh my God. Like, I'm telling, like, these one-liners sometimes are just like, the delivery is excellent. Let me know if, you know, you found it funny too. I don't know. Maybe I'm just like fucked up, but I thought it was funny. So yeah, she ends up showing the house to this couple, and it's the bum fight house, and she, like, some, I forget what she does, but she ends up, like, making Stan feel even more emasculated, oh, because, she tries to stop the bum fights, and all the guys were like, oh, you need your wife to come save you, and then we find out the whole thing was a setup, aside from Francine. I don't think she knew. She definitely didn't know, because she has no idea what's going on, but then, the actor that they paid to fight Stan, they made him look like the craziest, and earlier in the episode, he, like, bit off his thumb to kind of show that he was nuts, and now he's talking to Stan about, oh, I'm an actor, and I'm also a hand model, but then he looks at his hand, and his thumb is gone, because he bit it off, and I thought that was, like, I thought it was so funny that they have two hand models in this episode. I don't know if that's, like, they did that on purpose or, you know, whatever, but this guy can't really be a hand model anymore because, yeah, he bit off his thumb. So that kind of sucks for him, but I guess he can model with one hand. Maybe if he just does like weird, like glove commercials or something. But anyway, Stan and Francine, they end up talking about everything and they make up and talk about how they're a team and whatever. But of course, they make up and everything's fine, but Stan, still, again, being his unhinged, can't think of a less extreme solution. He goes and fucks up the whole economy, the housing market, so that Francine would lose her job. He can't just, in this moment of communication, say, I really would like you to do something else or whatever. I mean, I guess that would be controlling, and I wouldn't like if my husband try to tell me what to do for my job. But that doesn't mean you go and, like, fuck with Alan Greenspan and then fuck with the whole housing market. I'm sure that there is an extreme solution if you're looking for an extreme solution before doing all that. So that's how the show ends. Francine doesn't have a job anymore. Stan feels better. And we are moving on. So, okay, I want to make sure that I, oh, no, I guess this doesn't really matter, but I kind of forgot about this part when they, at the beginning of the episode, when they're let out early for a half day because the threat levels are down, and Dick just says, I got stuff to do. That's me every day after work. Like, I gotta go. I gotta get out of here. I got stuff to do. And I only wrote that down because I relate to it. I don't know if how you feel about, you know, oh, I gotta get out of here. I got my shit to do. I don't know. That was just a little side thing. But I wrote that at the very end of my notes. So, of course, I forgot about it. But now we can wrap up with the trackers. So, the trackers, again, newspaper headline, flagpole / threat level indicator, house layout, goo theory evidence, and Francine's hobbies. I think I forgot to mention the goo theory evidence part. I mean, I talked about it, but I forgot to mention it was actually a tracker because I didn't have it underlined, of course. And object permanence is a big thing for me. So if it's not there, I'm not going to see it. So goo theory evidence and then Francine's hobbies. So for the newspaper headline, of course, we have, oh my God, I have to go all the way back to the beginning. Newspaper headline, stuff happens as wave of ambiguity spreads. That's a good one. I thought it was better than the pilot episode, but, you know, you let me know what you think of these headlines so far. We've got two of them. And then the flagpole / threat level indicator. There is a flag on the flagpole the whole time, but the flagpole itself disappears, you know, when the hazmat team is there. So yes to a flag. And then we did go over this a little bit also. The threat level indicator arrow is missing off the whole thing. So it's there, but there's no indicator at all this time because there's no arrow. Now for the house layout, there is still a window by the stairs. That hasn't changed yet. There's a couple pictures on, you know, going up the staircase. They're kind of small. The basement entrance is there, but the door is not. And then I actually think I wrote down that the door comes back, but maybe that's in episode 3. I started doing my notes at the same, I did them back to back, so now it's kind of blurry, of course. But there is a basement door, and there's, what else? The kitchen leads to the dining room on the right of the kitchen. So window by the stairs, basement door, it's open, there's no door. And then I just want to make sure that I didn't write down, maybe I did write that in episode 3, but, oh, yeah, I think, yeah, the basement door is there, but there's no, like, actual door. The entrance is there, but there's no door. That's enough of that. Anyway, and then I won't try to go into all of this again, but there is goo theory evidence in this episode. I have it written down in my goo theory receipts list that I've got going on here. And basically, we can start to see, like, the foreshadowing of Roger, you know, not liking the Smiths, being, you know, stuck in the house. It's making him amped up. But like I pointed out, even I just realized as I was recording this, there are signs that indicate, you know, his life before he was caught at Area 51 and brought to Area 51 and then, you know, handed over to the Smiths. So what did I write down here? Rachel McFarlane plays Barb Hanson. I talked about how Haley might have personas. She could be doing personas now, and she could have been doing them the whole time because she's immediately good at it later in that episode where she needs her internship form signed. And Roger, he wouldn't have been upset if they died. Like I said, he doesn't really like them. And, you know, I think he's trying to, like, get back at them for keeping him in the house because he's that petty. So that's what we've got for the goo theory. And again, if it doesn't make sense now, I'm so sorry. It's just going to sound like I'm rambling away, but it will make sense later on, I promise you. So please just stick with me on this one. And then we've got Francine's hobbies. We've got the first one, and that's real estate. So I think that's everything for this episode. Let me make sure I'm not missing anything. You can probably hear all my papers rattling around. Yeah. So, so that's everything for episode 2, threat levels. I feel like I did a little bit better at talking this time. I had a lot more to say, which helped. And so does, like, the weed and the beer that I have. That helps a little bit also. But I think I did okay talking. Hopefully I sound a little bit more, just a little bit better than I did in episode 1, because that, like, it makes me cringe. I just don't like listening to my own voice, but whatever. And I've got, you know, we've got better trackers. So now our trackers are clear. And if you're listening and you have thought of stuff that you keep track of in this in this show as a whole, please let me know, because I would love to, like, talk about those too. Overall, I would give this episode a solid, like, 8 out of 10, because, you know, they really start to make everyone shine. It's a well-rounded episode. There's a lot going on. I mean, if you think about it, there's a lot going on in every episode, but I digress. I give it an 8 out of 10. You let me know what you give it, and if you give it, like, a rating. And I do also have an Instagram now. It's just Shallow Vows Podcast. And I started putting some stuff on there. I'm trying to, like, stay active. So, especially, like, in the beginning while I don't really have a lot going on except a couple episodes. So I'm on Instagram at Shallow Vows Podcast. And thank you for listening to Shallow Vows, the podcast. Again, I'm Sam from Connecticut. And thank you again for listening and joining. Hopefully I'll see you in the next one. And I'm looking at you, Seth. I'll be seeing you in episode 3. Thank you, guys. Have a great day, and I'll talk to you next time.
Unfulfilled? But I've given you everything you could ever want. You clean, you cook, and once a week we lie together as husband and wife in sexual congress.
What's going on? Hi, Barb Hansen, Exposition Realty. Let me bring you up to speed. Your virus scare prompted these folks to put their house on the market. Any questions?
No, that was very concise.
Give me a call if you ever need a real estate agent. I'm also a hand model.
Sweet Sean Hannity, your hands are lovely. Come on, Francine.
Oh, boy, she seems so confident. And the way she wears that smart cranberry blazer with her company's logo, her life must be so exciting.
Well, you could do what she does.
You think?
Absolutely. We will absolutely get you a real estate costume. Oh, you'll look adorable. And I'll dress up as a sea captain and we can take pictures.
I mean a real job.
No, it'll be great. I'll be Admiral Finch from the 58th Flotilla, and you'll be Lady Constantina, my real estate agent. And we'll promenade around the neighborhood, delighting young and old alike with our saucy banter.
Stan, I can't be a real estate agent just because you say so. It takes years to get a license.
You leave that to me, m'lady. Barb Hansen?
Yes?
Go! Wait! Go!
What's going on?
Congratulations, you're in real estate. Adorable.
Wait a minute, this is Barb's stuff. What happened to her?
She'll be fine.
Hi, Barb Hansen, Exposition Realty. Mind if I borrow one of your napkins? Thanks.
سرقة الكاس يا المنديلي. سرقت ليلى يديها الجميلتين.
You let your wife get a job?
No. It's more like a hobby. You know, something to keep her busy until Stan the man gets home.
I used to work in real...
What are you, gay?
I was when I worked in real estate. Once I stopped selling houses, my sodomy cleared up like that.
You know what's so wrong about gayness? If there are two men, who has the vagina?
No kidding. You need a vagina.
Yeah, vaginas are great. Wish I had one.
I did it! I sold my first house!
Hey, who's my big girl? That's such a nice family.
Oh, they're just the movers. The new owners are Greg and Terry.
What were you thinking? We don't want their kind in this neighborhood.
You're overreacting.
Overreacting? Overreacting. Do you know what those two are? Reporters. That's right, Francine. Members of the liberal media.
Stan, not all journalists are bad. You like Britt Hume, don't you?
You know damn well I like Britt Hume.
Just give Greg and Terry a chance.
All right, but if I... What the hell?
Dimmer switch. Huh? Oh, I'm sorry. Too fabulous? I hate this place.
Oh, I haven't even told you the best part. Look at my commission check.
Incredible. That is more than Stan the Man makes in a month.
And that's just for one house.
Ooh, you have been emasculated by the superior earning power of your little house frau.
Oh, God, stud, stud, hit the stud.
Well, you're in a pickle here.
I agree. In a relationship, money is power.
Look, this is just a bump in the road. Francine's like a puppy. Sure, she's having fun chewing her new bone and selling a few houses, but soon she'll get bored and go right back to ironing my shirts and scooting her ass on the carpet.
Open your eyes, Stan. Your very manhood is at stake.
Oh, that's crazy.
Is it? When my wife started working, I didn't think twice, but she kept earning more and more money, and then one day, bam! I didn't even get to say goodbye.